Will the House please come to order? Will the members at this time please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
39 members present.
We have a quorum present to conduct business. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, no member is excused from the call today for the session. Representative Porchot is excused following adjournment.
Our chaplain today is Pastor Milton S. Hunt. Would the members please rise for the invocation?
Let us pray. Most gracious God,
we give you thanks for the marvelous creation, especially our beautiful great land, from its treeless tundra to its magnificent fjords bordered with tall green trees and capped with snow and glaciers. We rejoice in your creation of humankind, whom you have made in your image, given power to rule, and presented to us the responsibility of stewardship of the creatures and resources of our planet Earth. Today, we thank you particularly for creating us with eyes, that we may see and feast on all your created marvels. Give to these men and women of this Alaska legislature that other vision, to see beyond today's budget figures and this year's employees and expenditures. Give to these people that longer view which pierces through the fog and confusion of today's cry to perceive our state in 50 or 100 years from now. Rise up from among us statesmen like William Seward, who sought not an icebox folly in the post-Civil War days, but had a vision of people and resources making America a great nation in the 20th and 21st centuries. Lift up our sights from the desk and papers to that more distant view of a great land on the Pacific Rim in the next century. We pray in the name of Jesus of Nazareth, who look beyond the cross of Jerusalem to see one world of brotherhood and sisterhood working together in love of God and of our fellow humans. Amen.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Hurley.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer of the chaplain be spread on the journal today.
Are there any objections as to having the prayer spread upon the journal? So ordered. Would the clerk at this time please certify the journal for the 71st and the 72nd legislative day?
As chief clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 71st and 72nd days in House Supplements 34 and 35.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the journal for the 71st, 72nd day and House Supplement number 34 and number 35 be approved as certified.
Are there any objections as to the correctness of the journal? Journal stands approved. Do we have any guests for introduction at this time? Representative Pierce.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I got crutch lessons this weekend from somebody who spent 2 years on crutches. He's also the best competitor I know, Ron Duncan in Gallery A.
Representative Sund.
Mr. Speaker, it gives me a great honor to introduce several people from District 1 with Representative Taylor and myself here representing the Ketchikan Theater Ballet. And I just like to take the privilege to make an announcement here that there are dance festival concerts this Saturday at the Ketchikan or the Juno Douglas High School Auditorium with a children's concert at 2 p.m. The evening concert is at 8. And there's dancers from Ketchikan, Juneau, Anchorage, Kenai, and Fairbanks. And with that, in Gallery A, we have Barbara Starr, who's a member of the board. If they could just stand up, I'll introduce all of them here. Margaret Auger, the artistic director, and Ginger Garrison, Kelly Tinas, Heather Tinas, Jennifer Eakes, Sonia Jorgensen, Lana Ingman, Angel Clark, and Jennifer Starr. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's a pleasure for me to introduce members of the Anchorage Crime Commission. Before introducing them individually, I would like to announce that the Crime Commission will be making a presentation tomorrow at the Juneau Chamber of Commerce. That's at noon tomorrow, and members of this body are welcome at that meeting. And I would now like to introduce three members of the Crime Commission, Pat Wellington, Don Patterson, and Rick Brown. Please help me in welcoming them.
Any further guests for introduction?
No. Mr. Speaker.
Representative Collins.
Thank you, sir. I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome in Gallery B a constituent of both Representative Vouchers and mine, Lisa Rubenstein, who is currently visiting Juneau on a spring break from law school.
Representative Davis.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to introduce to the body in Gallery B, Kathy Reardon, who is down from Fairbanks and a student at the university.
Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative Pettijohn and I in Gallery B have a constituent, Rena Posehn.
Any further guests for introduction? How about messages from the governor?
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate?
The Senate has adopted the following citations, and they are transmitted for consideration. In Memoriam John Hyland by Senator Paul Fisher, and Honoring Leroy and Berna West by Senators Ray and Ziegler. And the following were transmitted to Legislative Affairs for enrolling. Honoring the Diamond High School Boys Nordic Ski Team, and honoring Jeff Dillinger.
The citations will be referred to the Rules Committee for calendaring those that have not been sent to enrollment.
The Senate has passed the following, and they are transmitted for consideration. Committee substitute for Senate Bill 57 rules by the Rules Committee, an act relating to preferential use of Alaska agricultural or fisheries products and providing for an effective date.
That will be referred to two standing committees, Resources and Finance.
Senate Bill 99 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act relating to the state's right to appeal in criminal cases, amending Rule 202 of the Alaska Rules of Appellate Procedure and providing for an effective date.
Judiciary and Finance.
Senate Bill 172 by the State Affairs Committee, an act extending the termination date of the Council of Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault and providing for an effective date.
Finance Committee.
Senate Bill 187 by Rohde, Paul Fisher, Sturgiluski, and Kurtula, an act relating to adoption and providing for an effective date.
Health, Education, and Social Services, Judiciary, and the Finance Committee.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Do we have any other communications that should come before this body?
No, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us under the daily order of business to reports of standing committees.
The Committee on State Affairs has had Senate Bill 18 establishing William A. Egan Day on October 8 of each year under consideration and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Hurley, Chairman, concurred in by Hurley, Navarre, M.M. Miller, Boucher, Cato, and Jenkins. Senate Bill 18 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Committee on Finance has had committee substitute for Senate Bill 152 resources relating to extension and renewal of certain sales of state royalty oil under consideration, recommends it do pass, and endorses the resources letter of intent. The report was signed by Adams, Chairman, concurred in by Adams, Ringstad, Larson, Porcheau, Euling, Frank, and Binkley. Having no recommendation, Duncan, Rieger, and Cotton. Zemanski signed, not needed. Committee substitute for Senate Bill 152 appears on today's calendar. The Committee on State Affairs has had House Concurrent Resolution 13 relating to the 19th Annual Boys State at Camp Carroll under consideration and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Hurley, Chairman, concurred in by Hurley, Navarre, M.M. Miller, Jenkins, Cato, and Boucher. House Concurrent Resolution 13 appears on today's calendar. The Committee on State Affairs has had House Concurrent Resolution 14 relating to the 17th Annual Girl State at the Fairbanks University of Alaska campus under consideration. Recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Hurley, Chairman, concurred in by Hurley, Navarre, M.M. Miller, Jenkins, Cato, and Boucher. House Concurrent Resolution 14 appears on today's calendar. The Committee on Community and Regional Affairs has had House Bill 36, a special appropriation for payment as a grant to the Matanuska-Susitna Borough to provide road access to Willow Creek under consideration, reports it back without recommendation, and attaches a fiscal note. The report was signed by Gall Chairman, signing Dupass, Gall, and Furness, having no recommendation, Wallace, Phillips, and Grunberg. Maru signed, do not pass. House Bill 36 as a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Committee on Labor and Commerce has had House Bill 90 relating to labor relations between school boards and other public employers and their employees under consideration, recommends it do pass and attaches a fiscal note and a zero fiscal note. Report was signed by Navarre Chairman, signing do pass, Navarre, Davis, Boucher, and Kopanen. Having no recommendation, Collins, signing do not pass, Hanley. House Bill 90 has a further referral to the Hess Committee. The Committee on Judiciary has had House Bill 92 relating to child and spousal support under consideration, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 92, Judiciary, with the same title, recommends it do pass and attaches a letter of intent. The report was signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman, signing do pass, M.M. Miller, Pettijohn, Grunberg, Sund, and Clarkson. Signing no recommendation, Taylor and Phillips. House Bill 92 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Committee on Labor and Commerce has had House Bill 130, Educational Employees Collective Bargaining Agreements, under consideration. Recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 130, Labor and Commerce, with the same title, and recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Navarre Chairman, signing do pass, Navarre, Boucher, Davis, and Kopanen. Having no recommendation, Collins. Hanley signed, do not pass unless amended. House Bill 130 has a further referral to the Hess Committee. The Committee on Judiciary has had House Bill 148, creating a private cause of action relating to mobile home warranties under consideration, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 148, Judiciary, with a new title, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman, concurred in by M.M. Miller, Grunberg, Sund, Taylor, Clarkson, and Pettijohn. House Bill 148 has no further referral. The Committee on Hess has had House Bill 161 relating to student loans under consideration, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 161, Loans, with a new title, and reports it back with individual recommendations. The report was signed by the co-chairmen, Kopanen and Grunberg. Signing do not pass, Hurley and Kopanen. Signing no recommendation, Taylor, Grunberg, Pettijohn, and Hanley. Thompson signed do pass, and a man with courage is a majority. House Bill 161 as a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 198 relating to municipal assistance for certain municipalities organized under federal law under consideration, recommends it do pass, and attaches a letter of intent and a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Adams, Chairman, signing do pass, Adams, Ringstad, Duncan, Larson, Porcheau, and Binkley. Having no recommendation, Zemanski, Euling, Rieger, Frank, and Cotton. House Bill 198 appears on today's calendar. The Committee on Hess has had House Bill 209 relating to pharmaceutical medical assistance for needy persons under consideration, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 209 Hess with a new title, and reports it back with individual recommendations. The report was signed by the co-chairmen, Kopanen and Grunberg. Signing do pass, Grunberg. Signing no recommendation, Hurley, Thompson, Pettijohn, and Kopanen. Signing do not pass, Taylor and Hanley. House Bill 209 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Committee on Judiciary has had House Bill 241 relating to physical procedures of the University of Alaska under consideration, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 241, Judiciary, with the same title, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman, concurred in by M.M. Miller, Clarkson, Grunberg, Sund, and Taylor. Having no recommendation, Phillips and Pettijohn. House Bill 241 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Committee on Transportation has had House Bill 291, making a special appropriation to the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities for local service roads and trails under consideration, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Cato Chairman, concurred in by Cato, Schultz, Herman, Furness, Davis, and Pinyalberry. House Bill 291 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees.
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us to the introduction of citations and resolutions.
Citation in memoriam, Magnhild Lee, by Representatives Hurley, Sund, Taylor, and Ziegler. Citation in memoriam, Glenn David Evans, Jr., by Representatives Hanley, Pierce, Rieger, Senators Rody, Fakester, Jaluski, and Abood. Citation in memoriam, John Miles Corbett, Action Jackson, by Representative Schultz.
The citations will be referred to the Rules Committee for calendaring.
I have no resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
How about introduction, first reading, and reference of bills?
House Bill 326 by Szymanski, an act relating to scenic corridors along state highways.
Transportation and Finance Committee.
House Bill 327 by Kopanen, an act relating to the disclosure of information.
State Affairs and Judiciary.
House Bill 328 by Taylor, an act relating to licensing of persons who inspect electrical administrators.
Labor and Commerce Standing Committee.
House Bill 329 by Schultz, an act excluding certain service from the definition of employment and the Alaska Employment Security Act and providing for an effective date.
Labor and Commerce and the Judiciary Committee.
House Bill 330 by Cotton, Hanley, Szymanski, and Phillips, an act establishing a special unit for the investigation of criminally exploited and missing children and providing for an effective date.
State Affairs, Judiciary, and Finance Committee.
House Bill 331 by Thompson, an act relating to the theft of commercial fishing gear.
House Special Committee on Fisheries, Judiciary, and Finance.
House Bill 332 by Grunberg, an act relating to eviction from a mobile home park and providing for an effective date.
Judiciary Committee.
House Bill 333 by Thompson, an act making a special appropriation to the Department of Community and Regional Affairs for payment as a grant to Small World Incorporated and providing for an effective date.
Community and Regional Affairs and Finance.
House Bill 334 by Kopanen and Davis, an act relating to the installation of asbestos in public buildings.
Health, Education, and Social Services and Finance Committee.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us to the consideration of the daily calendar. Would the clerk please read the first item on today's calendar?
House Bill 198 by Gall, an act relating to municipal assistance for certain municipalities organized under federal law and providing for an effective date. The Committee on Community and Regional Affairs has had House Bill 198 under consideration, recommends it do pass, and attaches a letter of intent and 2-0 fiscal notes. Report was signed by Gall Chairman, signing do pass, Copeland and Wallace, Gall and Grunberg, signing no recommendation, Phillips and Furness. The Committee on Finance has had the bill under consideration and recommends it do pass and attaches a letter of intent and a 0 fiscal note. Report was signed by Adams Chairman, signing do pass, Adams, Ringstad, Duncan, Larson, Porcheau, and Binkley, signing no recommendation, Szymanski, Euling, Rieger, Frank, and Cotton.
We're under second reading. Do we have any amendments?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Amendment number 1 by Gall. And it starts page 3, line 3, and it has been duplicated and placed on each member's desk. It's quite long.
Representative Gall.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the amendment and ask unanimous consent. It incorporates the two letters of intent into the bill.
Do I hear any objections? Hearing no objections, the amendment has been adopted. Do we have any further amendments on the desk?
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that House Bill 198, as amended by the House, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Are there any objections to the advancement to third reading? Would the clerk please read the bill for the third time?
House Bill 198, amended by Gall, an act relating to municipal assistance for certain municipalities organized under federal law and providing for an effective date.
Is there any debate? Representative Euling.
Can we have a brief at ease, Mr. Speaker?
The House, please stand at ease. Would the House please come back to order? Before they add ease, we're in third reading on House Bill 198, amended. Do we have any further debate? Representative Gall.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just would like to thank the members and the chairman of the committees who heard the bill for their consideration and for the interest of all members in the community of Metlakatla today. Thank you, sir.
Any further debate? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall House Bill 198, amended, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Clerk, tally the board.
38 yeas, no nays.
House Bill 198, amended, has passed the House. Representative Clox.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the vote on final passage of House Bill 198, amended, be considered the roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Are there any objections to the effective date clause? The effective date clause has been adopted. Representative Clox.
Is there any questions? I will not be moving the letter of intent. It's been incorporated in the bill.
Would the clerk at this time please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill number 273 by Duncan, Porchot, Taylor, Sun, Boucher, and Ringstad, an act relating to extralateral rights of federal lode mining claims. The Committee on Resources has had House Bill 273 under consideration, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 273, Resources, with a new title, recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Schultz, co-chair, signing do pass, Schultz, Cato, Jenkins, Pierce, Sun, Thompson, and Miller, M.W. Miller. Signing no recommendation, Herman and Wallace. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Resources Committee substitute for House Bill 273 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Are there any objections to the committee substitute? Committee substitute has been adopted. Do we have any amendments on the desk?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Clox.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that Resources Committee substitute for House Bill 273 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Any objection to the advancement to third reading? Would the clerk please read the bill for the third and final time?
Committee substitute for House Bill number 273, Resources, by the Resources Committee, an act relating to extralateral rights of federal lode mining claims and providing for an effective date.
Is there any debate? Representative Ewling.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a brief question to the sponsor of the bill. First of all, the differences between the committee substitute and the original bill, and also an explanation of what a lode mining claim is and the real need for having the bill.
Representative Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The difference between the committee substitute and the original bill are as follows. The first thing we did is we added an effective date. The original bill did not have an effective date in it. We added that in the committee substitute. Also on line 11, we changed the structure of the sentence following A to make it more grammatically proper. The drafters thought that the original language or the language in the original bill was not grammatically proper, so there were some changes made there, and also added the words are confirmed and granted to an. So we added that phrase, are confirmed and granted to. And then the rest of it was just kind of grammatical change to bring everything into conformance with what we had done previously, and we added the last section adding the immediate effective date. That was the difference between the two bills. The purpose of the legislation is to clarify the law in Alaska and confirm that owners of federal lode mining claims located prior to statehood are entitled to extralateral rights under shorelands, tide lands, and submerged lands. And what this will do, or we hope will do, will ensure that owners of such claims have secure title to these deposits so that they can go ahead and proceed with their financing and proceed with the project. The doctrine of extralateral rights, as I understand it, originated under the Federal Mining Law of 1872, provides that the owner of a federal lode mining claim is entitled to follow a vein downward outside the vertical boundaries of his claim if the top or the apex of the vein is within his claim. So if the vein starts up here within his claim, he can follow it downward and outside his property boundary as long as the top of the vein is within his claim. The doctrine only relates to the title to the minerals contained in a specific vein. It does not entitle the owner to any surface use outside his claim, does not relieve the owner from obtaining all the necessary permits required by law before conducting operations, and does not apply to placer claims. The doctrine, as I said, has been around for about 100 years. It's clearly applicable to the uplands in the United States, such as in the Rocky Mountains and other places where there's been mining, and including Alaska. As I said, the law is not clear, however, on whether the doctrine applies to lands underneath navigable waters, such as tidelands and submerged lands. And this piece of legislation is to make that clear, that those rights do apply, and to confirm those rights in Alaska.
Is there any further debate? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 273 resources pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. I guess all members have voted. Should the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
40 yeas, no nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 273, Resources, has passed the House. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on final passage of Committee substitute for House Bill 273, Resources, be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Are there any objections to the effective date clause? The effective date clause has been approved. Would the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 152, Resources, by the Resources Committee. An act relating to extension and renewal of certain sales of state royalty oil and providing for an effective date. The Committee on Resources has had the bill under consideration and recommends it do pass and attaches a letter of intent and a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Schultz co-chairman, signing do pass, M.W. Miller, Son, Cato, Herman, and Schultz. Signing do not pass, Thompson, having no recommendation, Pierce and Jenkins. The Committee on Finance has had the bill under consideration, recommends it do pass, and endorses the Resources letter of intent. The report was signed by Adams Chairman, assigning due pass, Adams, Ringstad, Larson, Porchot, Euling, Frank, and Binkley. Having no recommendation, Duncan, Rieger, and Cotton. Szymanski, assigned not needed. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Having no amendments, Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Senate Committee substitute for House Bill 152 be considered engrossed, advance the third reading, placed on final passage.
Are there any objections to the advancement? Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm objecting mainly because I feel I need an explanation that may be worthy of an amendment. We asked for a three-month extension, and I'm not quite sure of our dates. I know the line 18 says that the date of the contract, I'm assuming the date of the contract was signed May 9th, 1984, yet we're extending this to October 1985, which is more than 3 months. Could someone explain that, or is the date a little different? Is it June or July?
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I believe that the contract was signed May 9th, 1984 for a one-year period, and that the extension would add 3 months to that contract.
Is there any further discussion on the advancement? Representative Martin.
Yes, sir. If that's so, sir, then that means that October 1st, 1985, it's approximately 5 months, not 3 months.
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, the contract was signed on May 9th, 1984. And I have a copy of the contract right here. I believe that the dates are correct. I'm going to be arguing against this bill, so why don't I let somebody else defend Mr. Martin?
That's a noble cause. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I thought I had found a new advocate for our cause here. No, the contract was signed, a one-year contract was signed, and it expires in the end of June this year. So the 3 months would run it through until the beginning of October. And the reason we need the 3 months extension is because there's a clause in the new contract which says the new contract, which does not take effect for 4 months after ratification by the legislature and signature by the governor. And so there would be a time frame there where there would not be coverage. So this is just extending the old contract until the new contract, if approved, would take effect. And I would just like to say that this contract, or your vote, is no way is construed as approval of the new contract, because it's right now the new contract is, I believe, is I can't remember. It's a House bill, and it's in oil and gas right now, and it's going through extensive hearings in oil and gas, and it'll go on to resources and House finance, and then it'll do the same thing over in the Senate. And there's a letter of intent from the Resources Committee which says that this is no way to be construed as a vote is approving the new contract. This is just extending the old contract for 3 months in case that the new contract is approved by the legislature, so there will be new lapse time. Thank you.
Are the objections still maintained? Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I maintain objection at this time because, as I brought up during discussions of this issue in finance, I'm concerned with the fact that we're extending a contract and really don't have a basis for that extension through the three-month period, at least from any evidence that I've seen. There's been no evidence that's shown that the requirement for HAYGO, which is the product that is being used in this case, is going to be used for the peaking power for the Golden Valley Electric generation. So I'm not too sure that there's any real reason to extend for the three-month period. It's my understanding, based on previous historical uses during this period of time, that indeed they may not even take that HAYGO fuel, and what we will in all likely see is that that fuel is actually passed on through MAPCO and sold on the market as their own fuel, as they do when Golden Valley doesn't take a call on it or does not actually buy it from them. So it ends up, from my perspective, maybe being a windfall for MAPCO in this case, and we're actually extending a further windfall for them. And from my perspective, I guess it may be in our best interest to either shorten that time period down or not approve the contract. And maybe that would be a potential amendment with regard to reducing that period, or maybe the sponsors could answer the question whether or not we actually have a need for the full extension.
Representative Clarkson. The House, please stand at ease. Would the House please come back to order? Before the at ease, the motion before us is advancing from second to third reading. There was an objection. Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, I've removed my objection.
Okay, the objection has been withdrawn. Is there any further objections?
I object.
Okay, we still have an objection. Representative Cotton.
For the purpose of a question, I have on my desk a letter from Representative Miller. And in the second paragraph, the last sentence, or the second to last sentence, is suggests that if we don't pass the bill today, I guess it's the last sentence, the state will have to initiate its 90-day notification period on Friday, March 29th. So I want to make sure I understand what our time requirements are here. We've waited until today to put this on the calendar, and then if we don't give final approval by Friday, then the state has to, is this issue dead at that point if we haven't done that? That means we have to advance today, reconsider today? Maybe someone could respond to that.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In our discussions with Kay Brown, the Director of Oil and Gas, she says that our 90 days notification periods do start on Friday, the March 29th, and the reason it is now on the calendar is because it has just come out of Finance Committee in the last couple of days. I'm not really sure myself, you know, once this 90-day notification period starts, you know, what kind of leeway we have within that. Ms. Brown really didn't say.
Representative Clarkson, would the House please stand at ease? Would the House please come back to order? Do we still have objections to the advancement to third reading?
I remove my objection, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Cotton has removed his objections. Do we have any further objections? Representative Furness.
One last objection, Mr. Speaker. I don't mean to delay the process. In reviewing the data, I may want to entertain an amendment. In reviewing the data, I understand that the legislature gave the ability of entering into this type of contract in 1976. MAPCO, well, it's not MAPCO, but at least the present contract, or the present person exercise an option to purchase royalty oil in 1981. And I understand that there's somewhat of a complicated formula assessing the price for this. My question to anyone that may know is, what is the actual dollar that we're receiving now for that oil per barrel, and how does that compare to what the current market price of that oil is selling on the open in the open market?
Representative Davis.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I might have to check some figures on that to give the actual dollar, but there's a 30-cent premium on the oil. I don't know if that's an answer to your question, but it's 30 cent premium per barrel over the in value price. And I'd have to check to see what the in value price is exactly.
Okay. So. Representative Furness.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I can read that, and that really doesn't tell us anything. There is an opportunity here to, if that 30 cents a premium is not a market level premium, there's an opportunity for us to take a critical look at that. We're to extend this contract, and if I understand it, there is another piece of legislation looking at a longer term extension. It appears that we should send a signal at this point as to what that renegotiated price per barrel should be. And in absence of that information, I think we probably should delay any additional action on this bill and give persons who are supporting us an opportunity to come back to the body with that important information.
From a point of parliamentary procedure, the bill, if it is not advanced to third reading today and is held in second reading, automatically appears on the calendar on the next session day in third reading. Representative Miller.
Thank you. I have a fact sheet from DNR, and they don't have the prices listed here. However, the summary of the current contract, which this would be extending for 3 months, the price right now is the amount the state would receive had it taken the oil in value, plus field cost allowance, plus a 30 cents premium, plus additional amounts of favorable settlement of the state of Alaska versus Amerada Hess is reached.
Representative Sund.
Retain at ease. Short.
The House, please stand at ease, but would the House please come back to order? Still objections to the advancement. Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I just wanted to make sure that, I support what Representative Davis said as far as the answer to the representative from Muldoon. The actual verbiage in the contract is, the price for the oil tendered under this agreement shall be equal to the amount the seller would have received from its lessees for the royalty oil tendered if that royalty had been paid in money taken in value rather than in kind, plus a premium of 30 cents per barrel, plus the field cost allowance incurred by that oil as determined under the Prudhoe Bay Settlement Agreement, which means 30 cents over the in-value price.
Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. One last critical question here. In reading the information, I'm aware that the ultimate selling price for the of this oil will depend upon the settlement of the Amerada Hess litigation. Now, I would assume that that could feasibly result in additional dollars to the state of Alaska. My question to anyone that may know is, do we have a trust account set up to collect at least a portion of this dollars in anticipation, or are we simply leaving it up to the company to accumulate these dollars and ultimately reimburse the state? I think that's a critical question that ought to be addressed at this time.
Representative Sund.
Yeah, in answer to that, under the Amrita Hess case, we are collecting the money. It's a corporate income tax case. If we win, we keep it. If we lose, we have to pay it back.
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, can we have any of these, please? I think
would the House please stand at ease? Will the House please come back to order?
I got it.
Representative Davis.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. We did review the contract, and the Golden Valley is liable for the Amrita Hess adjustments. And I did talk to one of the board members from Golden Valley last night, and there's, I believe, $800,000 in a reserve account that Golden Valley holds in case of an Amrita Hess adjustment. And there's also another $400,000 in a reserve account held by MAPCO.
Representative Herman.
Mr. Speaker, may we revert to introduction of guests, please?
Are there any objections to the request? Proceed, Representative Herman.
Mr. Speaker, in Gallery A, I'd like to introduce Don and Sandy Penner from the Bristol Bay Borough in Naknek.
The call has been satisfied. Is there any further discussion on the advancement of the bill to third reading? Representative Ewing.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a brief question to probably one of the representatives from the Fairbanks area. I know we're talking about a three-month extension here, but what's the intent? Are we going to eventually sign longer-term agreements, or what just seems like, are we going to have to go through the same process again in the next legislative session, January 1st? What's the situation on that?
Representative Miller.
Thank you. As I explained earlier, there is right now a House bill with the current contract for GVA, which is a 10-year contract. Right now it's residing in House Oil and Gas Committee, which is receiving numerous hearings on it. In fact, there have been a couple hearings last week, and I think there's some hearings scheduled this week on it.
Are the objections still maintained to the advancement of the bill to third reading? Representative Furness.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I have just two last comments. One is one of the prior speakers indicated that GVEA was somewhat responsible for the additional fees that may be assessed as a result of the settling of the litigation. I recall reading also, I believe that responsibility has in part been transferred to MAPCO, in that MAPCO is a prime refinery in this instance. You may want to double check that. Mr. Speaker, I also had a question to anyone that can respond. Line 21 of the legislation indicate that this has an immediate effective date. I want to know as to why is that.
Representative Ringsted.
Okay, listen up. We'll try this one more time. There's contract runs out the end of this month, or the 90-day period runs out the end of this month, so that by the end of the contract and the end of June, you have to give notification ahead of time. So to make this thing effective immediately, they can proceed and not have to give their notice to get it working. The Department of Natural Resources tells us that they have to have it done this way in order to get through the hoops that the legislature has put on them.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to answer part of the question about the liabilities, the Amrita Hess liabilities. That's correct. That's why both the utility and MAPCO share responsibilities for that, and they both have reserve accounts.
Are the objections maintained to the advancement to third reading? Hearing no objections, would the clerk please read the bill for the third and final time?
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 152, Resources, by the Resources Committee. An act relating to extension and renewal of certain sales of state royalty oil and providing for an effective date.
Is there any debate? Representative Cotton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to speak against the passage of Senate Bill 152. I think there's a serious constitutional question that is aside from the merits of whether GVEA ought to receive an extension of the one-year contract they now enjoy. The Constitution, Section 2, Article 19, I think, or 17, that discusses local and special acts, requires that the legislature not pass a special act if a general law can't apply. And I suggest that the way this thing is worded, even the sponsor of the bill, and when testifying in the House Finance Committee, allowed that, well, it's unconstitutional, but it's not as unconstitutional as the original bill that was introduced. My feeling is that even if it's not as unconstitutional as the original bill that was introduced, it still violates that section of the Constitution. And we are setting up a situation that applies only to one particular contract. And Section 3 says that this section is repealed October 1, 85, so no other contract could fall under this legislation. As a result of that, I think we've passed up our opportunity to extend this contract or to deal with it. The 10-year contract that's before the legislature now could have been introduced earlier. Also, I think I want to take exception with another thing that Representative Miller allowed in his letter. The second to last sentence in his second paragraph says, these notice requirements, together with an actual lapse in the contract, will cause a substantial interruption in the supply of oil to GVEA. I don't believe that GVEA is going to have an interruption in their supply of oil, even if this contract doesn't. During the testimony to the Finance Committee, or I guess it was the Oil and Gas Committee, one of the two, the MAPCO people allowed that they certainly would be able to supply GVEA with their turbine fuel requirements now, and even if the 10-year contract didn't pass. One of the things GVEA was interested in is a secure supply, and they do receive a very minimal bonus on the price. So I don't believe that by a failure of the legislature to pass this bill, that GVEA will have an interrupted supply. And secondly, I think that if we did pass this bill, we would be acting unconstitutionally.
Representative Mark.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wholeheartedly agree with the gentleman from beautiful Eagle River on this here. And the constitutional question is extremely important. The other question that I would like to pose to whoever wants to answer them, if we did this, then we could do it on other areas. Like I understand that the governor has just requested that there's a substantial gas increase from the Cook Inlet for the citizens, the consumers of the city of Anchorage. We could extend that contract. So I bring that up mainly because we're showing favoritism to one area of the state from the natural resources of the whole state that everyone should participate in. If that is further extended, then why not the city of Juneau? They have outrageous prices up here for gas. We should consider something for them. There is other sources, to my understanding. They could contract for the period in question with other producers up there at the North Slope or within the city of Fairbanks. I feel the bill is really, number one, unnecessary. Number two, it gives special favoritism to one area of the state in the use of Alaska royalty oils. I would very much feel that if we all vote against this and consider the new bill coming up, that we'd be treating all of our citizens equally.
Any further debate? Representative Pettyjohn.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think the point raised by the representative from Eagle River is valid, and my question is related specifically to Article 2, Section 19 of the Constitution, which he cited. And my question is it not possible for this bill to be amended or modified so that it is not a local or special act, but a general act? Is there a way to, I mean, I'm not necessarily in disagreement with representatives from the Interior about the intent of what they want to do here. You know, I'd probably vote for the bill, except for this constitutional question. And that, to me, is of some importance. Is there a way to accomplish what you want to do here, to get this extension, but to use general language? In other words, to modify sections of Title 38 so that the extension is accomplished, but it's done in a manner that of general application, so that another contract, maybe there isn't another contract, but if there, or a similar contract, that an extension could be granted by the administration, perhaps, or granted by a resolution to the legislature. I'm not familiar with this area, but I can read the Constitution, and that causes me some difficulty. And the question is there a way to do what you want to do, but not in a manner which looks to me like it's a local or special act?
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I guess it's a case where we get two attorneys in the room and we'll have six different opinions from them. We do have an opinion from Mr. Randall J. Moan from our own legal counsel, which addresses this same issue. And he cites two cases and leads him to believe that it is not a special act. And the two cases is State versus Lewis and the State versus Abrams. And ironically, one of them was dealing with Eagle River giving them special power or incorporation privileges. And then there was another one dealing with a three-way land swap. So we do have a legal opinion, which was rendered to the House Special Committee on Oil and Gas when asked about the same question. And they said they didn't believe it was a violation of the Constitution. So we do have four more attorneys in the room. I guess we could find out.
Representative Clarkson.
Yes, sir. The member from Eagle River has made a serious mistake in raising a legal question in a group that has so many lawyers in it. Mr. Speaker, I am not an expert in this area, and obviously research needs to be done, but I don't believe there is a constitutional violation. Courts have repeatedly approved the use by the legislature of language that's so narrow that it may only apply to one group as an exception, a permissible exception to the that provision of the Constitution. And the most obvious examples of those are legislation throughout our statute books that apply to Anchorage. And they apply to Anchorage because Anchorage is defined. The bill will say, for example, any city in the state that has over 200,000 people. Now, that only applies to one. That is a technique that's used repeatedly in the statutes and has been repeatedly approved. So, therefore, I think that that is possible. The other point to be made is that I think that the approval of royalty oil agreements, the Section 2 now I'm pointing to, is probably a situation where a local or a special act is authorized, and we do it repeatedly. We do it at least twice a year with regard to these royalty oil contracts, because the statute, the legislature was required to specifically approve each contract. It is impossible to do that in a general act. Therefore, that is a situation under the Constitution where a general act cannot be made applicable. So I think that under those two principles, first, that you can get around this provision by defining something in such a narrow way that it does only apply to one, and that's been approved, and secondly, because special acts are allowed for royalty oil contracts.
Representative Gruenberg, number two.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I speak with trepidation. I just call the body's attention on the constitutional question. If you're concerned about a special act, let's look at the bill we passed about a half hour ago on Metlakatla. By the way, I don't think it's unconstitutional. I think that's constitutional, and I think that this is too.
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, a couple things. Of course, Section 2 of the bill is specifically authorized by a general act. Our general laws tell us that the legislature must approve royalty sales under certain circumstances. That's where that application comes, and that's why that's not a special act. Some people will argue there's a separation of powers problem there, but I won't. I agree that that the legislature does have that authority. And in reference to the legal opinion from the Legislative Affairs Legal Agency, he discusses only Section 1 of the bill. Section 3 is what makes this thing unconstitutional, because it shuts it out. It shuts out anybody else it could possibly apply to. When in reference to the majority leader's comments about how Anchorage is specifically described in the statutes as a city of more than 200,000 people, there's no expiration date on that, or there's no discussion about how it only applies to cities that were 200,000 as of January 1, 1985. It's an open-ended situation. So theoretically, Juneau or some other city could achieve that numerical status. Not very likely, but at least it's not specifically shut out. Like this Section 3 specifically says that Section 1 of this act is repealed October 1, 1985. There's only one contract that falls in under that window. And I think that's what makes it different from other statutory language that describes cities by size or other language that someone might mention. But again, on the legal opinion from our own legislative lawyers, makes no reference to Section 3. He says, you have asked whether Section 1 violates the Constitution. And he concludes that Section 1 does not violate the Constitution. I agree with that. I think Section 3 violates the Constitution.
Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, on the question that the gentleman from Spinard brought up, constitutionality of Metlakatla, I think it's very constitutional. For the first time in the history of Alaska, we are treating all the citizens of Metlakatla equally, and that's what we're asking for in the use of our natural resources, too, with this bill, to me, circumvents.
Any further debate? Representative Davis.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I haven't reviewed that memorandum recently, but the same bill drafter that was asked to comment on whether this was constitutional was also asked to draft this, and I mean, I can only assume that our legal counsel wouldn't be drafting unconstitutional pieces of legislation, although that's not necessarily the case, but I'm just giving them a benefit of the doubt. He was asked to review if this was constitutional, and I think he's stated that it was in the committee meeting.
Are you ready for the question? Representative Szymanski.
I just want to make a brief comment that I'm going to vote in opposition to legislation because, as I indicated in previous debate, the legislation, from my perspective, is unwarranted and certainly not needed at this time. While a void certainly can exist, there's not going to be the financial hardship that's been described. And indeed, I don't know that there's going to be anything other than a windfall produced for the refiner in Fairbanks. And if I could see a tangible benefit, a real tangible benefit, and a need that's going to be passed on to the consumers up there, I guess I would look differently at it. But it's just not there.
Representative Pignalberry.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I find myself in the unusual position of being aligned with the representative from Potter Swamp, but I would like to say that we both sat in on hearings in the Oil and Gas Committee on the long-term contract, which is supposed to supplant this contract. And basically, the benefits that accrue under this current contract, and as they have been proposed in the new contract, which I hope we will not adopt, one way not to adopt it is to make sure we send a signal on this one. We have calculated, given the fact that you've got a monopoly refiner in Fairbanks selling a product that has only one buyer, okay, one refiner, one buyer. There is no marketplace for the product up there, and all the information we've been able to get comes from that refiner. Now, we've been able to calculate that about $6.5 million per year in benefits accrue from this contract. However, according to the testimony and information presented by Golden Valley, and concurred in by the refinery, about $550,000 a year of that $6.5 million goes to Golden Valley, which they pass on to their subscribers. And that comes to be about one-tenth of a penny for every kilowatt hour used by the Golden Valley subscribers. So in terms of the impact on the electric bill of the utility users that subscribe to Golden Valley, it is negligible. However, of that $6.5 million, the rest of it, the $6 million portion, goes to the refiner. Actually, what's wrong with this bill is the title. It ought to be called the MAPCO Refinery Relief Act because the benefits accrue to the refiner who has adopted a price of what the market will bear in the Fairbanks area. Now, I know that the people at the utility think they need this, but what is the consequence of not extending this contract? Well, number one, if their figures are true as they have been reported to us, then the $550,000 in benefits will no longer be passed on to the consumers in Fairbanks. And I say that's negligible when spread out over the number of consumers in kilowatt hours. But more importantly, it will serve as an indicator to that refinery and to that utility that they had better come in to the state with a new request for royalty oil as represented in this new contract and take a much more realistic approach to how the benefits of the royalty oil contract will be spread out between the refiner, the utility, and the consumers. The law and the regulations on royalty oil stipulate, and the whole premise on which we use royalty oil in the state of Alaska is to pass on the benefits to the consumers of the state of Alaska. And it's clear that the current contract comes nowhere near maximizing the benefits that our consumers and that area can get. So I'm going to vote against this contract, and I'm going to try to work with, if they want to come back with a new contract proposal, I'll try to work with the people from Fairbanks and the refiner and the utility to come out with a contract that is much more fair in meeting the goals that have been set out in statute. Thank you.
Representative Ringsted.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess on that I'm not sure the mathematics is right, but I think on a more serious subject, if we were to take around and listen to what everybody knows about the interior Alaska's power needs, maybe if we get some of our wizards in alternative energy figure out how you take some of this hot air down here and put it up there, we wouldn't need this.
At this time, I lift the call of the House. Representative Davis.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. There's no disputing the fact that $550,000 is a benefit to the consumer in Fairbanks, and I just want to give some figures. we in Fairbanks spend about 11 and a quarter cent a kilowatt hour, and just to compare that with some other locations around the state, in Anchorage it's around 6 cents a kilowatt hour. In Juneau, it's for AL&P, it's 6.17 cents a kilowatt hour. In AVAC, there's around a 27 cent subsidy per kilowatt hour, and I'm not disputing the fact that AVAC spends a lot of money, but there is subsidies around the state for people with their electrical costs. $550,000 is a substantial sum of money. It is a subsidy to the consumer in Fairbanks. We need that subsidy. Thank you.
Representative Cotton.
I would like to emphasize a remark made earlier about the fact that the Fairbanks consumers would receive a benefit in the amount of an annual discount of $550,000. Big deal. That's 1.5% of their electric bill. So if you've got a $100 a month electric bill, that's $1.50. I think they can do better than that.
Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall committee substitute for Senate Bill 152 resources pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please lock the rolls? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
29 yeas, 10 nays.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 152 resources has passed the House. Representative Clocks.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on committee substitute Senate Bill 152 be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Any objection to the effective date clause? The effective date clause has been adopted. Is there a letter of intent? Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, the letter of intent appears on page 577 of the journal. I move and ask unanimous consent that the letter of intent on committee substitute for Senate Bill 152 be approved.
Are there any objections to the letter of intent? The letter of intent has been approved. Representative Pignalberry.
Speaker, I'd like to move for reconsideration or give notice of my reconsideration on committee substitute for Senate Bill 152.
Notice of reconsideration has been given on said bill. Representative Pignalberry.
Need I give separate notice of reconsideration on the letter of intent?
Well, it's all encompassed. It was in one motion.
Okay, thank you.
Would the clerk at this time please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Concurrent Resolution Number 13 by Cato, Grusendorf, and Phillips, relating to the 19th Annual Boy State at Camp Carroll. The Committee on State Affairs has had the resolution under consideration and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Hurley, Chairman, concurred in by Hurley, Navarre, M. M. Miller, Jenkins, Cato, and Boucher. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Having no amendments, it is in second reading. Is there any discussion? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall House Concurrent Resolution 13 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
37 yeas, no nays.
House Concurrent Resolution 13 has passed the House. Representative Miller. Void the roll. Sure you don't want to debate this? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall House Concurrent Resolution 13 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? clerk please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? The clerk please tally the board.
39 yeas, no nays.
House Concurrent Resolution 13 has passed the House. The next item on today's calendar.
House Concurrent Resolution Number 14 by Cato, Grusendorf, and Phillips, relating to the 17th Annual Girl State at the Fairbanks University of Alaska campus. The Committee on State Affairs has had the resolution under consideration and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Hurley Chairman, concurred in by Hurley, Navarre, M.M. Miller, Jenkins, Cato, and Boucher. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall House Concurrent Resolution 14 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? The clerk tally the board.
38 yeas, no nays.
House Concurrent Resolution 14 has passed the House. Still under consideration of the daily calendar, we have some final action on some citations. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the citations appearing on today's calendar be approved.
Are there any objections to the citation on today's calendar? Citations stand approved. This brings us to unfinished business. Any unfinished business that come before this body? Representative Herman.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to serve notice of reconsideration on my vote on House Bill 273.
Representative Herman, did you say 273 or 373? Okay. Notice of reconsideration has been given on committee substitute for House Bill 273. Further unfinished business? Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Schultz be excused from the call of the House March 28, 29, and 30th.
Are there any objections to the person's request to be excused from the call of the House? So ordered. Any further unfinished business? This brings us to announcements of standing committees and special committees. Representative Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is to remind all the members of the Anchorage Caucus that we will be having a caucus meeting tomorrow. It is a teleconference with the Anchorage Assembly, and it requires that we meet in Centennial Hall. There will be four capital vans available to transport the representatives and the senators to Centennial Hall on Thursday at 11:45 sharp. If anyone wishes to use this transportation, please assemble in the House chambers tomorrow at 11:20. The Capitol vans will be available to return the caucus members to the Capitol at 1:05 immediately following the close of our meeting. Thank you.
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, the House Finance Subcommittee on Corrections will meet tomorrow morning at 8:30 in House Finance.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, just to remind members of the Judiciary Committee and others that are interested that our joint Senate and House Judiciary Committee meeting today with the Judicial Council will be in the Governor's Conference Room and not in either of the usual places.
Any further standing committee announcements or special committee announcements? General announcements. Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On a general announcement, I think the representative from South Anchorage indicated that the Anchorage Crime Commission will be making a presentation before the Juneau Chamber of Commerce. For those Anchorage members who decide not to attend the regular caucus meeting, I would encourage you to attend the chamber meeting. In fact, we've had a special request from the Crime Commission to have as many Anchorage members there as possible. So it seems like it's going to be a busy day. Perhaps we could share the load and attend both functions in some way.
Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, on the general announcement, a correction has been made. The Republican speaker today at the Republican luncheon will be the Honorable Representative from East Muldoon, Walt Furness.
Any further general announcements? Representative Schultz.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just want to notify the members of the body that on the subsistence issue that there will be a teleconference scheduled from 5:30 to 8:30 on Monday, April the 8th. And then on Saturday, there's also one scheduled. It'll be from 1 o'clock until whenever, and we will try to get as much all of the public testimony, if possible, out of the way at that time. So however long it takes Saturday. So if you're looking for a little excitement on Saturday, the 13th, why, come on down.
This Representative Furness.
Mr. Speaker, just one additional general announcement. It's been stated here that I will be addressing the Republican Club today. The title of my presentation will be A Critical Analysis of the Speaker of the House. So I would invite all members to be present today.
Trying to spoil my lunch? Or eat it? Representative Wallace.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to revert back to introduction of guests, please.
Are there any objections to the request? Proceed.
Yes, I'd like to introduce to the body Luke Titus from Mento in Gallery B.
Under daily order of business, we are now at special orders.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Collins.
I request a privilege of the floor for the purpose of speaking on increasing energy costs.
Are there any objections? Proceed, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Effective April the 1st, 1985, the state will value cook inlet gas at current market rates instead of the long-term contracted rates. This means that there will be an increase in energy costs in Anchorage and the South Central area. This increase could be up to 20%. This has the potential of affecting energy costs for users throughout the state. For this reason, I have written a letter to Governor Sheffield requesting his assistance. I'd like to read that letter to you. It goes as follows. Dear Governor Sheffield, Article 3, Section 1 of the Alaska Constitution vests the executive power of the state in the governor's office, and as such, you are responsible for all administrative policy decisions handed down by state agencies and departments. Recently, the Department of Natural Resources Division of Oil and Gas issued a policy decision which may have the effect of raising gas and electric utility rates for 100,000 homes and businesses in the Anchorage and South Central Alaska. Our concerns, however, extend beyond the South Central region of the state. They also pertain to consumers in rural Alaska currently benefiting from the Power Administration Act signed by you in 1984. As you know, the rates established under this act are premised in large part on per kilowatt hour cost in the Anchorage area. A rise of 20% in kilowatt hour cost to Anchorage area residents would have an adverse impact on power consumers residing in 136 rural communities throughout the state. This policy decision is scheduled to take effect April the 1st, 1985. Surely you'll agree that a decision of this magnitude affecting tens of thousands of power consumers warrants proper consideration by the citizens of this state and their legislature. It is for this reason that we respectfully request that you direct the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources to temporarily suspend this policy decision until such time as the state legislature has had an opportunity to study the impact of the department's decision upon Anchorage and rural power consumers. We appreciate your consideration and encourage your prompt attention to this matter as time is of the essence. The letter is available here for anyone who wishes to sign it, and I really would like your support on this matter. You've been handed a copy of the letter as well as a newspaper article that details the information. Thank you very much.
Any further special orders? Representative Jenkins.
Mr. Speaker, I ask for the privilege of the floor to speak on House Bill 288.
Are there any objections? Proceed, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise to ask this House to consider the statements of many of my colleagues in the last few weeks to handle this issue, subsistence, in a careful and reasonable manner. In order, Mr. Speaker, to clarify this issue, this body must continue the public hearing process began last week. For as everyone in this body realizes, this is an ongoing problem since before statehood. We are now in 1985, and we must look at this problem and issue in that manner. And we need a complete debate in order to come to those kind of conclusions. At the very least, Mr. Speaker, this body needs to address this serious constitutional resource issue. We must, number one, hear at least from the prevailing attorneys on the Madison case. Secondly, we need to have, in our own mind, if we can possibly do so, a clear definition of what customary and traditional really means. Thirdly, we must know if indeed the concept of the user, the people who indeed use the resource, regardless of their manner of their capture, if they are indeed not subsistence users. And last, but although it may not be able to be done, I would suggest that this body take those public hearings to other parts of this state, both rural and urban, because I feel that would be extremely helpful. In conclusion, I feel, Mr. Speaker and fellow members of this body, we must give this issue the careful consideration it deserves. And then and only then will we get beyond the specters of federal control, loss of funds, closure of each and every river or competing resource river in this state, and possibly bring from this body a body of legislation that we all can live with and reasonably go on for the next 25 years of this state. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Any further special orders? Representative Boucher.
Mr. Speaker, I request permission of the floor to speak on the legislative pay raise issue.
Are there any objections? Proceed, Representative.
I think we recognize that one of the problems that we are going to have to deal with, whether it be this year or next year, for varying reasons that have been put forth clearly in the editorials, is the issue of the legislative pay raise. Now, some of you may not be concerned about it. We in South Central hear repeatedly from our constituents that this problem must be dealt with. I don't think it's ever been the subject of the dollar amount, but the concern for the method that it was done, that it was brought before the public. I think we're going to have to deal with it now. There's been hearings conducted in Representative Hurley's committee. It is now lying dormant in one of the committees, and, ladies and gentlemen, is not going to go away. I think that, as I've said earlier, there are battles to be fought and victories to be won. I am proud to have been a part for the 70-some-odd days of this session of the legislature. We have tackled many tough problems. I think we can address this problem in the same manner, in the same professional manner, whether we agree or disagree on the subject as we have on others. I think it's time to move on it. I think the people are asking us to move in that direction. And I think it is a prime piece of legislation that we're going to have to deal with this year, not next year, after people who voted on that pay raise are vested in the retirement system. And if you don't think that the people are going to react across the board to public indifference to them, you got a mistake. You've misjudged them once again.
So I hope that the body moves and deals with this difficult problem, no matter what your particular feelings on the issue are. Thank you, sir.
Any further special orders? Representative Kopanen.
Mr. Speaker, I ask for permission of the floor to speak on the interrelationship of the development of public policy and the right of freedom of speech.
Are there any objections? Proceed,
I don't wish to take too much of the time of this body, but I would like to point out that there is an important burden on us, and that is to develop legislation, statutes carefully, and with as full knowledge as possible of everything that affects the information coming to us and the decisions that we have to make. On the federal level, we have noticed that people who have brought out information that is embarrassing to different agencies have had difficulties to the point that we have had to have federal so-called whistleblower legislation to protect their rights. In a hearing that we had in Hess to discuss the problem of asbestos in the public schools, and specifically to the question of whether there should be or should not be certification of the people who do it so that they do it properly, testimony was given that people who were untrained would do it improperly and the problems would arise. The person who gave that testimony was, for a short time, relieved of his employment, but has recently been reinstated. Whether that firing was due to his testimony or not is not really germane to this. The very fact that such a threat might exist for others is important. The public rightly wants to know what we do in our deliberations. We do not meet in camera. We have a public meeting law. Whatever is brought before us is public knowledge, and rightfully so, that people know why we make particular kinds of decisions. But that also means that we have to protect the right of the public to testify, that the individual's right to bring out something that may be unpopular, may be embarrassing to one agency or another, must be protected. And so to that end, I've introduced House Bill 327, which typically has a very boring title, an act relating to the disclosure of information. But that bill is a whistleblower bill that protects the right of the individual to testify to a legislative committee and also protects our right to make sure that information is not being kept from us that will color our deliberations and may lead us to make decisions based on the lack of some key important information from time to time. Thank you.
Representative Phillips.
See that the representative to my right, majority leader, is frowning a little bit, but under introduction, I guess we do have a former member of this body, and I would like to introduce him, Gallery B.
Are there any objections to the introduction? Proceed, Representative Phillips.
Mr. Speaker, and Gallery B is a former representative from Kodiak, Merle Snyder.
Merle, as a distinguished member of this body, would you care to share a few words with us? Thank you for being with us. Representative Clocks.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the House stand in adjournment until Friday, March 29th at 10 a.m.
Any objections? So ordered.